just nothing other than sublime.
Live on LCFC.com, Facebook and Twitter. You're listening to Extra Time on LCFC Radio.
Yes, hello and welcome to Extra Time on LCFC Radio with me, Dan Bates, Jerry Taggart, Steve Guppy and Tony Cotty is dialled in from his home in Essex.
Where is TC?
Good evening, gents.
Come on, TC.
I'm at home, guys. I'm at home.
TR, I thought you were just hanging under the table there, TC. I was telling you to get up. How are you, buddy?
I'm all good. Thanks, Dave. Are you okay? You all right, Dan?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Well, thank you. Gups, I know you were nearly late, weren't you, this evening? A bit of a stress getting here with the traffic.
So that's not late, is it?
No, nearly though.
It's not late because I was late last week.
It was
two weeks ago.
The traffic.
Gups,
the traffic.
Martin O'Neill would say leave earlier.
Yeah, correct.
Or live early. Live nearer.
we'll come on to the game, of course, with Liverpool. That late heartbreak with the penalty from James Milner. We'll also hear from Brendan Rodgers and Ricardo. We've got our weekend trivia and last box standing, and we'll have a quick preview of the international break as well and what that's like as a player, both playing and not playing international break. But Jerry, let's start with the game at the weekend then, because well, it looked until the 95th minute like Leicester were going to get a really hard-earned, well-earned point, but it wasn't to be in the end.
No, absolutely. Very, very frustrating, should I say, for everyone involved. And there was Mark Albrighton, he's done absolutely fantastic initially, with that recovery run, they get back, take the ball off Origi. And then there was a little bit of indecision between Mark and the keeper. The keeper looked as if he was going to come out and grab it. And then he sort of pulled away at the last minute. Mark takes a touch. And then it was just a bit of, misfortune from there on in. But, it went to VAR. VAR, give it. I still think in my mind it's very, very harsh. I don't actually know what VAR was doing in that situation. There's also a train of thought. Why doesn't the referee go and look at it on the TV screen? I've not seen one referee this season when there's been a VAR decision gone up to, when the referee's gone to VAR. I've not seen one referee go over and look at the TV screen just to clarify the situation. Yes, he's seen what he's seen, but surely just to be double sure, could he not just go over and have a look at the TV screen?
That's a good point, actually, isn't it? Because in the World Cup and in major tournaments when they were trialling it, I'm sure there was referees going over having a look, and I know they do that in the MLS because I've seen them do it regularly. Go and have a quick look. I think if he'd have had a quick look, I'm not sure he'd have given it. Because when it went to VAR, VAR wasn't looking, I believe, it wasn't looking to see if it was a penalty or not. They were just looking to see if there was contact, which there was. But was there enough contact for Mane to go over the way he did? I don't think so.
Be interesting to get your views on it, Tony, because obviously, you're in and around on Match Day Live and what have you at Sky, and I'm be interesting to see what the views were in and around, the studio at that time.
Yeah, first and foremost, I had an interesting Saturday. I watched the Brighton Spurs game. That was the early game I'd done tags. And then my late game was the West Ham Crystal Palace game, all of which left me free to watch whatever game I wanted to watch at 3 o'clock on Saturday, which makes a change for me. But I chose, obviously, to watch the Liverpool-Leicester game. And I think you're both talking about the monitors there. I think the feedback we've had, certainly in the TV studio, is that it's the absolute last resort to go to the monitor.
Yeah.
I think, you're both quite right that in the World Cup and other games we've seen, they're encouraged to use the monitor. I think for whatever reason, the Premier League referees have decided that is an absolute last worst case scenario, if that makes sense. They're encouraged to make a decision, which the referee did. He made his decision to blow for the penalty. And then, of course, they then look at the VAR and they made their decision. Listen, I agree with what you guys said. Was there contact? Yes.
Yeah.
Was it a theatrical dive? Of course it was. I think we all felt down in the TV studios that it was very, very theatrical. But if the foul would have been anywhere else on the field, would the referee have given it? Probably. So it's a really, really difficult one. But, this is what VAR is for, is to get the right decision. But the right decision about contact, yes. But, in terms of the dive that followed, I thought it was very, very poor from Mane.
I think that's what fans, Jerry, are most confused about. More, it is the confusion over VAR.
Absolutely.
We've had Peter on Facebook says, gutted by the result. Nick says, I'm not understanding the point of VAR. It's not being used properly. Because I guess the first time, really, yes, I know it was brought in a few cup competitions, but the first time that we here in England really saw it was the World Cup. And during that World Cup, as Steve says, and as they do in the MLS, the referees went over to the monitor, didn't they, regularly to look at their own decisions and change their mind potentially on that. But we just haven't seen that, as he said, this season.
No, absolutely. And yes, there's contact, but you've got to even contact, you've got to take that into context. And as Tony's just said, you know, was there enough contact for him to pull him down? You know, he's just touched his standing leg. And then when I don't think Mane actually sees Albrighton touch his leg, because I think he's looking at the ball and trying to get the ball out of his feet to get either a shot or a cross or a pass across the box. But once he feels that touch, that's when you see that theatrical dive from Mane. And is that contact that Mark Albrighton makes, that's a question, is it enough for Mane to make that motion towards the ground? And that is where the indecision, and that's where referees, it's easy to give that decision as a referee. It's a harder decision to say no penalty, because then you have to think about booking Mane for diving. And is it a dive? Is it a clear dive? Is it simulation? Probably not pure simulation. Is he trying to gain an unfair advantage? Or is he trying to, what's that rule that come out about, you know, trying to scuffle the referees or whatever it is? I can't remember the correct terminology.
Deceiving the referee.
Is it one limb? Probably. Is it a clear-cut penalty? I don't think so.
Steve, I mean, we'll move away from the penalty really onto the performance, but just a final point on that. I guess the argument would be, Mane, if he doesn't go down, he doesn't get the penalty, but was there contact? Was there enough contact? The consensus is, I think, as Tony was saying, throughout the country, it probably wasn't a penalty, which is it makes it more frustrating for Leicester City, doesn't it?
Of course. You have to say, Mane, first and foremost, he did really well to react to, you know, the indecision between Mark Albrighton and Schmeichel. So he was there, but that was his performance. He was so lively. He really was a thorn in the side for Leicester, really, and he is most weeks. But then once he gets the ball, I think he's kind of going down a blind alley. There's no real chance for him to shoot. And, of course, the whole occasion there plays in as well, because the fans go up. There's a minute to go. The pressure's on the referee straight away. He feels a touch, and there was a touch, and down he goes. You know, I know there's a lot of... I remember hearing people like Jose Mourinho saying it's intelligent play to do these sort of things, because his Porto team used to do it a lot. Mm. You know, so, you know... Take a pick. You know, was it cheating? Was it good play? Was it clever play? With Leicester hat on, it was such a disappointing you know, decision from the ref, because of the whole context of the game. They'd done so well, Leicester. They'd hung in there, and you know, looked like they were going to get a point. And then it was a double whammy, because the ref makes a decision, and then you think, oh, that's nightmare. That's not. And then you go to VAR, so you're clinging. You've got a little bit of hope again, haven't you? But actually, you don't have any hope on this occasion, because they're not looking for, whether it's a penalty. Yeah. They're just looking for contact, and it was.
Could I just make a couple of final points? I mean, first and foremost, this is definitely not the first penalty given in the last minute at Anfield, because I remember back in the 1980s, Paul Walsh diving for a penalty and we lost at Liverpool. So that was about 30 years ago. I think secondly as well, I think managers actively encourage players to, you know, if there's contact, to go down. I think that's not a new thing. I think that I've had at least two managers who said to me, if you get contact, go down, get a penalty. So that's not a new thing as well. And just finally on the VAR, I think, you know, what I was pleased in a way is that the referee's blown for a penalty, because how can you decide if it's a penalty if you don't blow for it? Because sometimes they don't bother blowing for it. If he thinks it's a penalty, blow for the penalty, then VAR look at it, and then he's got his mate in his ear saying, we think that it's a penalty. But if you're not sure, as Tag said, you know, let's encourage them to start using the screens, and at least the referee can have a second look at it and work out whether he's made a mistake or not.
Well, I guess if they don't want to undermine the referee, Tony, that's why they're not overturning these decisions.
But it's about getting the right decision, though, Dan, isn't it? That's what we all want. We want the right decision, you know. And then I suppose it's open to opinion, then, isn't it? But at least the referees, it's such a tough job for them. They get one look at it, but now we're saying to you can actually have a second look and see whether you gave the right decision.
But on that undermining point, if the referee himself goes and looks at the TV, realizes he made a mistake, he's only undermining himself. Yep. It's not like someone else has made a decision saying he's made the wrong decision.
But Dan, could he not? I mean, you tell me this might not be possible. Could he not have just played on and then just have a quick look at that. Just check that while we're playing on. Is he allowed to do that?
Yeah.
Of course he is.
Because then now he's asking for VAR to make a decision on whether that was a penalty.
I think they have to wait for the ball to go dead, so it goes out for a throw-in or a goal kick or whatever. In the meantime, the boys would have been looking at the decision. Yeah. And then when the ball goes dead, then they can then refer back to it. But then, of course, the problem is if Liverpool go down the other end and Leicester go down the other end and score a goal, then obviously that can cause problems as well.
No, of course. Maybe they don't want to do that too. I honestly think if we'd have done it that way, wouldn't have been a penalty.
Yeah, there's obviously a lot of frustration in the comments on Facebook, but I think Kevin sums it up nicely. We need to move on now. VAR says there was not enough, should have said there wasn't enough contact for a penalty, but it's water under the bridge. So, Jerry, as on a performance point of view, we'll move away from it.
Thank goodness for that.
It was a good performance from Leicester, which I guess adds to the frustration and the disappointment.
I think that's the crux of this conversation is the performance almost matched the result. But for that last gasp decision, very good performance. You're going to come under pressure away from home at Anfield against a team like Liverpool. They're a top team. They've got some top players. But they showed that gritty determination yet again in the second half. And the build-up to the goal was a fantastic piece of interplay between Albrighton, Ayoze Perez, and then finally James Maddison. And they got their just rewards. And again, you could see Liverpool were on the back foot leading up to that goal. And then, as I say, just unfortunate that, in the dying seconds, what happened. But you've got to say that it's another good performance from Leicester.
And Tony, you look, and we were looking, weren't we, after the Newcastle win last week at the fixtures that Leicester have had so far in the Premier League. You think they've gone to Anfield, they've gone to Stamford Bridge, they've gone to Old Trafford, they've hosted Spurs here. They've had some really tough games in these opening eight, but they're what, fourth in the league, and that's only their second defeat. And you look at the Old Trafford game and then the defeat at the weekend, they'll be disappointed they didn't get something from both of those games.
Yeah, without a doubt, Dan. As I said, I watched the performance. I thought it was a really good performance. I mean, how many times have we seen Liverpool go a goal up and then they get a second, a third, a fourth, and absolutely, run all over teams, but they didn't. Leicester, they dug in and they had to dig in. I thought defensively, you could argue perhaps they switched off a little bit for the first goal, the two centre-halves. But, I think defensively as a team, they played really, really well. They defended really, really well. And we know that they've got the quality going forward. And it was just a case of just when you get that chance, you've got to take them at Anfield, as we all know. And it was a wonderful goal. It really was. But, if I'm one of those Leicester players, I would have been absolutely gutted in the dressing room because you've had a point cruelly taken away from you, and it was a performance that deserved at least a point. There's no doubt about that.
Well, let's have a listen then to some of the reaction from those players that were in the dressing room at full time.
We played with real personality in the game. In the moments we had to defend, we coped with that pressure well. And then when we could play and broke through their pressure, we looked a real threat, and we showed our great mentality to come back into the game second half, get the equalising goal, and then it looked like we could be the team that could go on and win. So to concede, like you say, in the 95th minute is obviously disappointing, but a lot of positives to take, and like I say, we'll learn from it.
After being losing the game 1-0 and getting back to the score, it's difficult to take a goal in the end in a penalty. We feel frustrated and unlucky. We have more quality than we showed. Sometimes you lost the ball too quickly, and I think we have to keep working and keep improving.
We've had a good start to the season, but we still have lots of improvements to make. And thankfully, this is a group that's a very honest group of players that will look to improve and develop.
Very interesting there. That's, of course, Brendan Rodgers and Ricardo Pereira speaking to LCFC TV after the game. And interesting that Brendan says, listen, yep, we've had a good start to the season. Let's put this result behind us. That he talked about them being an honest group of players. They'll come back after the international break, work hard, Burnley at home, isn't it? So it's just about moving on and bouncing back from that.
I think so. I think, obviously, it'll take a couple of days. There's a lot of the players will be away on international duty. And when you boil it all down and break it all up, they've been beat. The two games that they've lost have been to two penalty spot kicks, basically. So the game against Manchester United, 1-0 penalty kick. The game against Liverpool got beaten on by a penalty kick. So that is no mean feat against two top teams. Okay, Manchester United at the minute are, you know, all over the show, but you don't go to Old Trafford and pick up easy points there. So you've got to give credit where credit's due. And with this two-week break and people playing international football, then it will give them enough time, obviously, to get their heads around it, move on, and then when they all come back, they're ready to go against Burnley, which, again, will not be an easy game.
And, Tony, before the Mane goal, well, obviously for the 95 minutes, Leicester hadn't conceded two goals in a Premier League game this season. So along with Liverpool, obviously before the game, they had the tightest defence in the league. And again, they'll be looking at their start, particularly defensively, that they've made and be really, really impressed. And obviously there's just the disappointment of what happened at the end of the game on Saturday. But overall, as a defensive unit, they've got to be really happy.
Yeah, I think I made that point then, didn't I? You know, I said defensively, not just the back four. You know, I praised Ndidi last week, as you well know, on the show. He gives them really good cover. So defensively as a team, I think they work really, really hard. And, you know, someone like Jamie Vardy, for example, he didn't get a lot of service, particularly on the day. But, you know, when you go to Anfield, you know, you're not going to get many chances and you've got to do your bit for the team. And, you know, I thought they all worked really, really hard for each other and it was a really, really solid performance. In terms of the international break, I think sometimes you're crying out for an international break because you're playing so poorly. But I think, you know, on this occasion with Leicester, I think they'll be disappointed, obviously, that they didn't get the point. But I think they'll all be, once they go on the international break, they'll all be looking forward to coming back and just trying to kick on with that run of form.
Yeah, I guess, Steve, after the defeat against Manchester United, it was, we've played well, we didn't maybe play well in that game. Yes, they played it a lot better at Anfield than they did at Old Trafford, but it was just move on from it, try and forget about it almost and move on to the next game. And that, I guess, is exactly what they'll be doing now ahead of the Burnley game.
Of course. You know, I think everyone knows, and the players are no different, that it's been a good start to the season. The performances have been there, you know, individual and collectively. So they'll be happy. In a way, it's a shame the international, you know, period turned up. Not sure they're, like you say, they're not sure Leicester, you know, are ready for it because they want the next game to come round because they're all buzzing. But, you know, you look at someone like Man United, I'm sure Solskjaer's packing their bags for them. But, you know, I'm sure Brendan will be a little bit of a disappointment that he's going to be losing the group. But that, you know, they'll soon pass and they'll be, you know, back at it and, you know, and ready for Burnley.
Jerry, just finally before we move on and look at the internationals, you said before the game, didn't you, particularly against Manchester United and then before the game yesterday, that the yardstick for Leicester City and where they might be at the end of the season, you wanted to judge it after the opening eight games, yeah, up until the second international
break. I think that's a fair assessment of, you know, you, and especially with the teams we've played. Now, Chelsea haven't proved since we've played them as in regards to their results, but we have played them away. So, yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I think, you know, the door is getting wider and wider as the weeks go on. You know, you see Tottenham getting beat, Manchester United getting beat again. Yes, Chelsea won. I think they're level on points with Leicester at the minute on 14 points. Arsenal are up and in and around it, which, you know, you expect that. But there's definitely a window of opportunity here for Leicester. And the next run of games that are coming up after the international break, there's a few games in there that, you know, you have to fancy Leicester against the teams that they play.
Well, still to come here on Extra Time on LCFC Radio, we'll take a look what else happened in the Premier League over the weekend. We've also got our Around the Leagues feature and we're going to check in with who's away on international duty for Leicester, but the time is 20 minutes past six.
listening to Extra Time, live on LCFC Radio. Your place for all the reaction to the weekend's football.
Yes, dotted throughout Extra Time this evening, we have our weekend trivia questions, which the three of our guests go head-to-head with each other on. And we've got our first one. Tony, because you dialed in, I'll let you have the first guess. Nearest to the pin. How many Leicester players across all age groups are going away on international duty?
Cool.
Wow.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, thanks for that one. all age groups. Oh, dearie me. 17.
Okay.
Good guess.
17 is the guess from Tony. Jerry?
I'll go 16.
16 from Jerry. Now, which way are you going to go, Steve? Are you going to go higher or lower?
All age groups. Just 15.
Are you?
Well, you went lower and you were bang on, Steve. 15.
15, was it?
15 oh. Leicester City.
Thank you very much.
Big guess, TC, that, though.
You started off well there, Tony.
You can have an assist for that, TC, because you put me in the right area there.
Makes a change, doesn't
it? Thanks, mate. Thank you.
Among the headlines, Ben Chilwell, James Maddison selected by Gareth Southgate for England. Ricardo, following his brilliant start to the season for Leicester, has been recalled to the Portugal squad. It'll be the first time he could feature internationally since the World Cup last summer, which is a bit of a surprise. James Justin's been called up to the under-21s with England. Luke Thomas, Fonte Daly-Campbell for the under-18s. Wilfred Ndidi as well has been called up. Johnny Evans, of course. Kasper Schmeichel, the list goes on. There's 15 of them. It's an exciting time, Jerry, isn't it? And an indication of just how good Leicester City are at the moment with the amount of internationals they have going away.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's, when you look at James Maddison, Ben Chilwell, especially these young lads who have broken into the England squad, that's, a massive cachet for the football club, especially. Yes, Johnny Evans, Kasper Schmeichel, they're experienced. But so it's more these young lads that are coming through and breaking into the senior England team for me is like just really, ramped up the profile of this football club yet again.
So James Maddison then, Steve, will he get his first England? Well, he's had a call-up, but will he play for the first time for England?
I think he's got a great chance. Gareth Southgate was, I think it was at the last home game, was it the Tottenham game he was there? And James Maddison.
My new game, he was there as well.
Yeah, but especially the Tottenham game, I thought James Maddison played really well. Obviously scored the goal and so... once again against Liverpool, I wouldn't say he had his greatest game, but he scored. So he's ticking every box at the moment. I'm sure he's got a fantastic chance.
Tony, dialing in, of course, from Essex. What do you think about James Maddison's chances? He's been called up three times by Gareth Southgate for the Three Lions squad, yet to make that debut. He's played nine times for the under-21s over the previous year. So he really will be chomping at the bit, won't he, to make that first senior appearance for England.
Absolutely, yeah. My only question marks really is just the fact that it's two away games. For England to be playing away, Czech Republic away, you'd imagine it. You'd expect England to win, but it's going to be a tough game. Then we've got Bulgaria away, again, another tough game. You'd expect them to win. And I know Gareth has been keeping a keen eye on James Maddison. I'm a big fan. I've always said that. He's a really tremendous young player, creative player in that. It's just whether he wants to go for what you would call a more defensive midfield to allow, because he seems to want to play the front three like Kane, Sterling, Rashford. I'm not saying they're all in tremendous form, but that's probably the three he's going to play. And then does he play a defensive midfield three? That's the only thing for me. It's not about James's talent or whether he deserves it or not. It's just about the tactics for the two games, I think.
Just on a more wider point on international breaks, Jerry, I know you played obviously a lot of times for Northern Ireland, as a player, when you go away, do you completely switch off from the club side, or do you still always have half an eye on what's going on back home, back with Leicester, or was it more right, you're away with Northern Ireland, it's all about that now?
Yeah, I think so. I always look forward to going away on international duty, but we had a really good set of lads, so it was always great to see some friends, some people I grew up with since I was a teenager, and then obviously played like Neil Lennon, Michael Hughes, people like that. I've known them since we were kids. So it was always good. Obviously, with Lenny playing here, we didn't have to go far, but just the other lads as well, it was always good to meet up and concentrate on that, concentrate on what's happening with them, concentrate on playing for Northern Ireland. Because to be honest with you, there wasn't a lot going on at the club. It's a bit like a ghost town, if you want, a ghost club, when there's international football zone, because there's, you know, in our time, there was that many internationals as well. I think we had 10 or 11 internationals who were always away. And so the lads who stayed behind, it wasn't really that interesting or that, you know, they might have got a couple of days off, bearing in mind, but other than that, as far as training and that was concerned, the intensity would drop right down.
Ray, what was it like, Steve? Because you think there's still players, obviously, in that dressing room at Leicester City that don't go away.
Why are you asking me, Dan?
Because you didn't get as many caps as Jerry for your question. <Russell.
laughs> That was a bit harsh, that. But, yeah, Tags is right. You know, I think it's funny, back in the day, Tony might remember this, be a little bit older than us, is it used to be considered, you know, especially for England caps, they tended to pick the London-based players. You know, it was quite difficult to get into the England squad from a club far away. But that's obviously changed completely now. You know, I mean, it's incredible the amount of England players alone that Leicester could have. You know, if Jamie Vardy hadn't retired as well, so that's great. But yeah, when they are away, you do tend to time off, you know, you go, you know, because sometimes it'll be like 4 or 5 players, you know, so you do get a bit of time off, or you come in and you get a chance to maybe work on your own game, which is good as well. So, you know, every player is different. Of course, a lot of foreign lads as well, that some of them may get a couple of days to go back home and, you know, see their families, whatever. So it's an important period, but I do think the lads who do go away, remember that, you know, you do forget about the, you know, your club football, because, you know, a lot of these teams, they're trying to get into the Euros, a major tournament, you know, which would be an incredible life experience for them to make it. So, you know, they will put it to one side and you know, Schmeichel for Denmark and whatever. So they'll all be, you know, really, really keen to do well for their countries, but they'll be back soon enough.
Yeah, incidentally, Schmeichel set to make his 50th cap for Denmark over the international break. Two of those players that are going away, James Maddison, Ricardo Pereira, Jerry, they're up for Premier League awards this month. So James Maddison for goal of the month, for that goal against Spurs, and Ricardo for Premier League player of the month. Brendan Rodgers also up for Premier League manager of the month for September. So again, three nominees in the awards. Harvey Barnes won goal of the month the month before. So we're hoping, fingers crossed, that it'll be a recurring theme throughout the season, that the Leicester players and management will be up for awards.
Yeah, well, that's the rewards, isn't it, for the start that they've had. And the important thing is that even if they don't win one of the three awards, it doesn't really matter. It's all the most important thing is just, you know, concentrating on keeping that momentum with the club. Yes, they are nice, don't get me wrong. And I think, you know, if I was going to pick, you know, who's going to win what award, then I think maybe Ricardo's got a really good chance, I'd have to say, along with Brendan. I think he's going to be hard pushed, James, to win goal. There's been a few good goals.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good goal, Tags, wasn't it?
No,
but it wasn't like, yeah, you know, top. I mean, a lovely finish. We'd have all been really, really pleased to have scored it. But I think, I'm not sure he's going to win it.
Tony, it might be one of your old clubs that was involved that might win goal of the month. Aaron Cresswell, I'm thinking off the top of my head, free kick against Manchester United. Trent Alexander-Arnold's free kick against Chelsea will be up there. So, Tony, you reckon James as well will be hard pushed to win that. But the context of the goal, sometimes that people forget about that, how massive that goal was for Leicester against Tottenham that day.
Yeah, it was a fantastic goal. But I agree with the boys. I think I'm not sure he'll win the goal of the month. But it's just great, I think, that Leicester are being nominated. It shows the progress that the club's made. It shows the, you know, where the club is in terms of what it wants to achieve this season. And I'm sure we're going to talk about some of the other results. But I said it last week and I'll say it again. That top six is wide open for a club this year. And, you know, as much as you want to win the personal awards and goal of the month, manager of the month, all that sort of thing, main thing is, the main objective is when you get to May next year, and that's when you look at the awards, that's when you pick up your prizes in the awards, and one of them hopefully will be Leicester trying to get into that Champions League place again.
Well, that works quite nicely into what we're going to speak about next, just after the news, which is what happened elsewhere in the Premier League over the weekend.
You're listening to LCFC Radio.
Boris Johnson says he'll talk to the White House if an American diplomat's wife doesn't return to the UK to face questions over a fatal car crash. Anne Sekulis left the country after the accident, which killed a 19-year-old motorcyclist, and is claiming diplomatic immunity. The Prime Minister's given his reaction.
I do not think that it can be right to use the process of diplomatic immunity for this type of purpose, and I hope Anne Sekulis will come back and will engage properly with the processes of law as they're carried out in this country.
Roads are being blocked in cities across Europe as protesters demand tougher action on climate change. Parts of central London are closed to traffic as thousands of people take part. There have been more than 200 arrests in the UK capital. Extinction Rebellion wants the UK to be carbon neutral by 2025, but energy expert Neil Strachan says that's almost impossible.
We have 25 million boilers in our houses. If you wanted to get them all out by 2025, that's 1 million every 2 months. Plus, you need the supply chain to do that. You need the power plants. That's an extremely, extremely difficult challenge to meet.
A baby boy who was stabbed last week has died in hospital. The three-week-old was injured in Newcastle on Wednesday, along with his mum, who's in a stable condition. A man's due in court later this month. Four people have been arrested at Luton Airport by counter-terrorism officers on suspicion of being members of a banned group. Three men and one woman from Sri Lanka arrived at the airport on Saturday and Sunday. Donald Trump has failed to block the release of his tax returns. It relates to allegations his company paid hush money to two women who claimed they had affairs with him, which he denies. And Sir David Attenborough says he's thrilled about his latest Nature series, which airs later this month. Seven Worlds, One Planet took 4 years to make. That's the latest. I'm Anna Russell.
Hi Leicester fans, it's Wes Morgan here.
It's Ricardo Pereira.
It's Johnny Evans.
I'm Ben Chilwell. You're listening to Extra Time on LCFC Radio.
Yes, welcome back to LCFC Radio and Extra Time with me, Dan Bates, Steve Guppy, Jerry Taggart and Tony Cotty. Right, Tony, you're Steve's one up in the trivia, aren't you?
I
you
am.
Won the weekend
yeah,
trivia, the first one.
Hello, Victor. Hello, Victor.
Can I extend his lead now with question number two?
Let him guess first.
Well, it's just a shout out if you know the answer to this one. So are you ready, Tony?
Ready, Dan.
After Man City and Liverpool, which team has amassed the most points against top six opposition since the beginning of last season?
Crystal Palace.
Tottenham.
Okay.
So we all get one guess, do we?
Yeah.
So say it again. Man City and...
After Man City and Liverpool, you've got the more thinking time here, Steve. Team has amassed the most points against top six opposition since the start of last season?
I wish I had my time again. Can I have another guess? Well, I was going to say... Arsenal. No. It's not Arsenal.
No. Well, you're all wrong then. No one gets a point. It's Wolves.
Of course.
After that, it's Leicester City in fourth place. But Wolves, they've got 20 points against the top six opposition. Obviously, only less than Man City and Liverpool. And... what a shock result that was, Jerry.
Coupon buster, wasn't it?
Wolves winning at Man City. I think one of the bookies had it was about 22-1 for Wolves to win at the Etihad before the game.
Yeah, well, there you go. It was a shock result. You know, Wolves have had a difficult start, but they got back on the winning trail last weekend at home against Watford, didn't they? And, that is just a momentous result. Imagine how they're feeling going into the international break after that. Going to Man City, who are in good form. Yes, they've dropped a few points this season, but to go there and keep a clean sheet and score two goals unanswered, that is fantastic work.
Tony, it wasn't even as if it was a smash and grab, really, either. Wolves had the better chances throughout the game. They missed three one-on-ones in the first half. Yes, City, I know, hit the post or the crossbar late on, but... Wolves were arguably the better team.
Yeah, I agree. But, I mean, Manchester City, defensively, they're struggling at the moment. I mean, they've lost John Stones, haven't they? Laporte's out as well. Mm. And as much as I like Fernandinho as a player, I don't think he's a centre-half. So, you know, they've got some problems at the back. Having said that, you know, they spent a lot of money. You would expect them to be able to cope. But I think Wolves are in a false position. I know they've struggled because they've had to play Thursdays and Sundays, and they started early with the European football. But they're in a false position. But, you know, what a confidence booster that result is. And, you know, they'll go into the break and they'll come back. And I'm sure we'll see Wolves sort of push their way back up the league now.
I know that hindsight's a wonderful thing, Steve, but if a lot of people, and we'll come on to Manchester United in a little moment, talking about not replacing Lukaku, but from a Man City point of view, do you think that it was a mistake maybe not replacing Kompany in central defence, because there's been the injuries to Laporte and Stones and having to play Fernandinho back there?
Well, like you say, hindsight's a wonderful thing, but you know, you'd think going into the season, everyone's fully fit. You think they're well covered there, aren't they? But you know, were they, or should they have tried to sign Maguire? I mean, if you believe everything you read, they tried to. Maybe they sort of like factored in that they thought they would get him, and obviously they didn't, and it's punished them. Yeah, they do. They are struggling at the back there, aren't they? They're not you know, quite as watertight as they were last year. But I think most teams would struggle with your first choice centre halves out injured, you know. But like Tony says, they've got so many such riches that, you know, that you're right, that they have to deal with it.
No matter what issues they've got at the back, you would still expect a team like Man City to score at home.
Yeah.
Against anybody. Mm. So the fact that they didn't score is testament to Wolves
played,
absolutely.
Yeah.
You can't take that. Forget about the two goals just for a second. It's Man City not scoring at home. You know, they weren't missing their top players going forward. They still had them on the pitch. We all know about the issues they've got at the back, but to keep Man City out at home for a team like Wolves to do that, you know, that is no mean feat.
We only have to remember what they were like here, though, weren't they, Wolves? Mm. You know, they caused Leicester a lot of trouble as well.
Yeah.
You know, they had five at the back. And they're too live, you know, they're lively up front. You know, they're a good team. It's just the only disappointing thing is the way their manager
yeah.
celebrates every goal when they're all. I mean, I hate the thing. I haven't seen his celebration. You've seen it, TC. Was his name Nunes?
Yeah.
Oh, the whole coaching staff, former. I mean, honestly, the celebration should be reserved for winning a World Cup final. Full stop.
But
every single goal they score.
To the end of the season.
I think
just quickly going back to Man City, I think the alarm bells will be ringing, because this follows on from a really poor performance against Norwich as well. Let's not forget they lost to Norwich. Mm. So, you know, 8 points difference between what we all expected to be a two-horse race. 8 points is a massive, massive gap now. And, you do worry about how Man City are going to bounce back.
You're just fueling the fire, aren't you, for Liverpool? No, aren't you? Will that result at the weekend for Wolves against Man City, that's just fueling Liverpool's fire even more now, isn't it, TC?
Yes, Tag. Yeah, I mean, Liverpool now must be hot favourites for the Premier League. Yeah. They've got to be. But Man City got to bounce back. I think they're just looking at their next two. They've got Palace away and Villa at home. So, you know, they're not easy game. No game's easy in the Premier League. We all know that, don't we? So, but 8 points is a big, big gap for them to breach now.
Yeah, just a final word on Wolves, Tony, as well. They did that. They won at the Etihad 2-0. No Pep Guardiola side has lost 2-0 at the Etihad in the Premier League. So it's the first time that's happened. And this all happened off the back of winning in Turkey in midweek in the Europa League as well for Wolves. So a lot of people, maybe another reason why they were so heavily not favourites.
A team like Wolves, you know, they can be forgiven for not being able to cope as well as other teams in Europe when it comes to European football. They're not experienced at it. The players still coming to terms and getting their head around what it means to go away to, you know, a country like Turkey, play a match there and then come back and, you know, reset your mind to play a big game against Man City. It's not easy. Man City have no excuses, you know, because they're experienced at that. They've been through it season in, season out for the last how many seasons in the Champions League. The same with Liverpool. You know, they've got no excuses, these teams, because they know how to manage the situations better than, say, a Wolves. So, you know, you take that into consideration yet again. It's just an unbelievable result.
It's easy to forget, Tags, as well. It's just their second season back in the Premier League, isn't it? I mean, that's how well they've done. You know, credit to everyone. They've really built the football club. You know, they've had a lot of years, like a lot of clubs, I might add, but they've had a lot of years of suffering, and now they're back. And, you know, what a result for the Wolves fans that was.
Tony, you said that you watched the Brighton Spurs game that took place, the early kickoff on Saturday. Another coup and buster, as Jerry said about the Wolves Man City game. No one saw that one coming, did they?
Well, I think I was concerned going into the. I mean, I did expect Tottenham to put in, you know, a better performance. I mean, off the back of the, you know, the horrible result against Bayern Munich, you know, you're thinking, like, surely these boys have got to respond. You know, they've got to get better. They need to go and put a performance in for their fans. But, you know, right from the first couple of minutes, and, you know, like, obviously we all feel for Lloris with the injury he suffered, but before that, the goalkeeping was, you know, it was Sunday league stuff. And I said that on the TV. It was such a poor effort. You know, if you're ever not sure as a goalkeeper, just chip it over the bar, punch it clear or whatever. But, you know, it was so petrified of taking the ball over the goal line. In the end, he just dropped it and, of course, lost his balance. He's now out for a while and he's the captain as well. So, you know, I said alarm bells ringing at Man City. I think they're ringing even louder at Spurs, because not only that, after that poor mistake, I mean, they was all over the place, Spurs, and, you know, they thoroughly deserved to lose 3-0. It should have been 4 or 5-0, and, you know, Maupay scored a goal, but there was an Irishman called Connolly who got a couple of goals, wasn't
he? He looked really sharp, didn't he? He,
you know, done really well.
Yeah, you know, not the similar type of player to yourself. Really, really sharp. In and around the box, second balls, he was on them like a flash. Absolutely brilliant.
Terrific result, though, for Brighton, Steve. And Graham Potter's a great story, really, isn't he? Going away to Östersund in Sweden, doing that magnificent job. Just reading here that in December 2010, when he joined Östersund, they were playing in the fourth tier of Swedish football. And then he got promotions, and now he's in the Premier League.
Absolutely. He's done amazingly well. I actually know Graham. I played with him at Wycombe Wanderers. He came on loan there once for a couple of months as a fullback. He wasn't very good, but I did his running for him as usual, like he used to do for all the fullbacks. But he has done amazing, and he's at Brighton. They like to appoint something a little bit different, don't they? They like to do that, and he's. You know, the stories of him, you know, where they put on plays and things like that in his previous club, like there for the fans to come and watch. I don't know whether it was like a seasonal theme for Christmas or anything, but I know they've done all sorts of really, you know, unusual things, shall we say, but whether that's for team building, for whatever the reason was, it worked because he was a fabulous success out there, wasn't he? And you knew it was only a matter of time before someone would take a chance on him, and sure enough, Brighton have. He has this, you know, he desperately wants to play out from the back and total football, and it worked really well against Tottenham the week earlier. You know, away from home, they were undone a little bit when they kept trying to play out. And who did they lose to?
Chelsea
just hunted them down from the word go, and it was like, oh, Graham, you know, but he stuck to his guns. And Tottenham, you have to say, you know, agree with the lads. You know, the Brighton, looking on paper, I thought this could be a game for Tottenham. I think, you know, if they needed to try and get their season back on track, you know, Brighton could be the one. But I was, you know, I was completely wrong on that, because the Brighton wiped the floor with them. Really.
What do you think's gone wrong at Tottenham, TC?
I don't know, Tags. I mean, I was with quite a few of the ex-Tottenham boys, ex-Tottenham players the other week, and they said they didn't know what was wrong, but there was something wrong at the training ground. So, you know, when you're hearing rumours like that coming from the ex-players, you're thinking to yourself, something's not quite right now. Whether that is the manager's unhappy, or the players are unhappy, or maybe a bit of both. It could be anything, Tags. But, you know, they've got to put it right quickly, you know. And as much as Pochettino's on a fantastic contract, we know that, and Spurs won't want to sack him because of what he's achieved over the last 5 years. In terms of rebuilding the club, I know you've got the point that they haven't won anything, but in terms of rebuilding the club and the new stadium, everything's going in the right direction up until the start of this season. Listen, it was only 4 months ago, 5 months ago, they was playing in the Champions League final.
So,
you know, we've got to keep it in perspective. But if all's not well at the training ground, like the rumours are saying, then you just wonder where Spurs are going to go over the next sort of month or so.
Well, obviously, they're rumours. They're not for us to speculate on. So we'll go to the final of our weekend trivia questions. Steve's already 1-0 up. None of you got any points in the...
It's just the final one. I can't be beaten.
You can't be beaten, no.
Well done. Fantastic.
Right, OK. We'll do it. You each do an answer, and Steve, you can go first this time.
Yeah.
Because you went last time, and B, you're winning.
Okay.
What was the combined age of the two Longstaff brothers, who, of course, both started for Newcastle United in their win over Manchester United?
I will go for 36.
Who's it, me?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll go 38.
Okay. Tony, with a final guess.
I think, Dan, that one of them's 19 and the other one's 21, which makes 40.
Bang on. Bang on. Well done, Tony.
Well done, TC.
Sorry, boys.
Yeah. I'll share the trophy with you, Tom. No problem.
He's got his phone open there. He's on the internet. I think one's 21 and one's 19. He knows.
That's a very good point, Tex. Yeah.
I would not do that to you.
Really, some video evidence.
Webcam set up, particularly for Last Fox Standing, which is coming up at the end of the show. Before we go to our Around the Leagues, quick word on Newcastle United and that win, and particularly the moment for the two Longstaff brothers and Matty scoring that goal. Mm. And what a moment, and what a goal it was as well.
Yeah, great strike. And he had another great strike. It hit the bar, you know, just before that. He's really played his part. Well, the pair of them have, so it must be great for their whole family, really. And I think his mum and dad were in the stands watching as well, which, you know, imagine that. Your two sons playing for your boyhood club and one of them scores a winner against Manchester United. It is the stuff of dreams, isn't it? I think the old man was an ex-ice hockey player, if memory serves me right.
I did hear that.
David Longstaff, I think he played for Sheffield Steelers or something like that there. So they come from a rich sporting background.
Pedigree in the family. And what do you think that moment was like, Tony? You scored a lot of goals for West Ham, obviously your boyhood club. What was the moment like for you when you got that first one? And that's exactly what Matty Longstaff will be feeling yesterday and last night.
Well, I read Matty's quotes and I think he said that he dreamt of it the night before. And, you know, I did as well on my debut. But that ball hits the back of the net, it's just the best feeling in the world. Obviously, my one, when I got mine, it was from 3 yards out, not from the edge of the penalty area.
It still counted, though, Tone.
But it's a wonderful feeling. And, you know, to play for your boyhood club. And, you know, my first goal was against Spurs, which was our local rivals. But, you know, for him to do it against Manchester United was, you know, they must have had a great night, the family, last night. And, you know, they're fully deserved as well for Newcastle. Yeah. But, you know, we're talking about alarm bells ringing. So we've gone from Man City and then we then spoke about Spurs. Well, if we're talking about those two, what do we say about Manchester United? Because, I spoke to someone earlier and I said that the last time, I don't know whether any of you are old enough to remember this, the last time a legend left Manchester United Football Club, which was Sir Matt Busby, I'm talking about before Sir Alex Ferguson, Manchester United got relegated.
That's right.
I'm not saying that that's going to happen this time, but they just haven't obviously recovered from Sir Alex Ferguson, and they seem to be getting worse across the board with things, and it's really worrying for the football club.
Just, Jerry, going back to the talking about scoring for your boyhood club, you obviously scored for Northern Ireland on a number of occasions. Can you remember what that first moment was like? Do you remember it, or did the euphoria and the adrenaline mean you almost have forgotten about the exact moment when you scored and what you were feeling?
Yeah, no, it's a bit of a surreal moment. It's scoring anyway, your first ever goal, as the lads will tell you. But I think scoring for your country's just got that added little bit of spice on the end of it. So yeah, that was a bit of a surreal moment because, let's face it, I ended up scoring 7 goals in 50 games.
Not a bad return for a defender.
Pretty good tags.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So you're not expecting that when you first turn up for international duty. You're not expecting you just think yourself so lucky that you've actually been picked to play for your country. But then, you know, to start scoring goals as well, it's a bit of a surreal moment, especially for a centre-half. Tony, obviously, and Gups as well, to a certain degree, would be expecting to chip in the goals because they're playing the forward lines. Whereas me, it was like, you know, you're just going in the game saying, I'm playing for my country here. Then actually go and score a goal. Crazy.
And the favourite of those seven's got to be the Germany one.
The Germany half volley. You know, any of these two would have been proud of that. About 15 yards out, bosh, straight in the bottom corner.
I think there'll be a lot of people Googling that one.
That would have won goal of the month, easily, that.
Right, there's 10 minutes to go on Extra Time here on LCFC Radio. We've still got to do our Last Fox Standing feature, so let's go around the leagues.
Round the Leagues on Extra Time.
A Lionel Messi free kick and a wonderful Luis Suarez overhead kick helped Barcelona to a 4-0 win at home to Sevilla over the weekend. The Catalan side, though, did end the game with nine men as they were shown two red cards late in the game. After a poor start to their season in La Liga, they're now just 2 points behind leaders Real Madrid in second place. North of the border, Stephen Gerrard's Rangers are top of the Scottish Premiership after a surprising day in Scotland yesterday. Firstly, Neil Lennon's Celtic lost 2-0 at Livingston, the first time Livingston have ever beaten the Hoops. And then after that, a Jermaine Defoe hat-trick helped secure a 5-0 win at home to Hamilton Academical. And finally, of the two current top nine teams in Bundesliga, So of the nine teams at the top of Bundesliga, only two of them won at the weekend. Bayern Munich, they lost at home to Hoffenheim. And Borussia Mönchengladbach cashed in on that, though. They won 5-1, which means they go top of the league going into the international break. So a surprise in Germany. Jerry, now, one of those goals at the weekend. I mean, a brilliant Suarez overhead kick, a Messi, and another free kick.
I know
you wanted Van Dijk to win the FIFA Best Award, but Messi did win it over Van Dijk. So I think that's...
Yeah, but I could see that. You know, I said, when you look at his stats for... Is it over a calendar year or over the season, that award?
I think it's season.
Season. Yeah. But he scored 51 goals in 50 games. And so you can't really argue with that stat, because that is just phenomenal. You know, in a top league, 51 goals in 50 games. It's, you can't really argue it. I wanted Van Dijk because, you know, let's face it, when you watch him live, he just strolls the game. He can do almost anything with the ball at his feet as well. It's not like he's just, you know, a great defender. His passing ability is just phenomenal. He cruises up and down the pitch when he wants, and more importantly, he transformed Liverpool into one potential title winners, and helped get his team to back-to-back Champions League finals.
Tony, that transition, that change of Liverpool, and that we've seen that since Virgil van Dijk's come in, how solid they've been defensively, back-to-back Champions League titles, as Jerry says, real challenges for the Premier League title this season. It's obviously not all down to one player and one signing, but that Virgil van Dijk signing, what an unbelievable masterstroke that was.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the time everyone went, wow, that's a lot of money, but, you know, he's an incredible player. I agree with Tags, he's a fantastic defender in all aspects. I think, you know, where I would give credit is to Jurgen Klopp, because I think, you know, a lot of the time we see managers, you know, like you talk to the fans, and the fans seem to know what the problem is. I'll give Arsenal as an example. We all know Arsenal defensively are struggling at the moment, and they keep buying forward players. But we looked at Liverpool. Everyone looked at Liverpool. They had two problems. They had a problem in the goalkeeper, as was proved in the Champions League final. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they had problems at centre-half. And what does he do? He goes out and buys Alisson for a lot of money, and he buys Van Dijk, and that's the two key positions, or two of the most important positions in a football team, a goalkeeper and an imposing centre-half. So fair play to Jurgen Klopp, and, you know, Liverpool have got... there was always good game forward, but now they've got the defensive hard nuts in there now, which is what they need.
Right, we do need to go to our last Fox Standard feature, but Steve, I will come to you very quickly as a former left-footed winger yourself, talking about Lionel Messi. Where do you put him bracket-wise as the best that's ever played the game? Is he up there for you?
Oh, yeah.
Is he the best?
Absolutely, yeah. He's a phenomenon. Amazing. I love watching YouTube videos of him as a kid as well. You know, just, you know, running around his front room and things like that. There's some amazing footage out there of his development growing up. But he is, I mean, I think in this day and age as well, I think defensively, the way teams set up, you know, it's harder to score than it ever has been, I think. And he does, like I say, 50 goals, 51. I mean, that's just stunning. So, yeah, for me, there's a very good chance he's the greatest player of all time.
Thank you very much, Steve. Right, 5 minutes to go, 5 minutes left of extra time. So let's go to our last Fox Standing feature.
Oh, dear.
Behind that mask you use. And did you think this fool could never win?
Jerry, you don't look too happy about the prospect of this.
Well, I've got to start thinking quickly, and that's when I let myself down. So.
So those of you that don't know Last Box Standing, there's a sheet of paper that's just been brought to me. I don't know what's on it. There'll be a theme on it. We've all got to take it in turns to answer on it. If we get it wrong, we're out, and it's Last Man Standing, Last Fox Standing. We started with Tony last week, so we'll start with Jerry this week. And the theme is Gareth Southgate's latest England squad. I've said we'll start with Jerry, so we'll start with Jerry. And wait for the dings as well.
Okay, I'll go with Ben Chilwell.
Steve?
I've got a name. What's up?
He's got to be
James Maddison. I get it now.
Harry Kane. Tony.
Jordan Pickford.
Rashford.
Oh my
God! You again.
I'm thinking of the Chelsea player. Yeah. I've got.
My head's completely on. Don't look at my answers. Come on, 5 seconds, Steve.
Oh, this is ridiculous.
Come on, 5 seconds. It's not.
That will go.
I know. That's terrible.
Well done,
that's
producer Sam.
Completely threw me that game.
Mason Mount.
That was what I was trying to think of. Idiot.
Alexander Arnold.
Jerry.
Oh, is it me?
Yes.
Tommy Abrahams.
Kyle Walker. No Kyle Walker then. So it's between Tony and Jerry now.
I'm going to go Harry Maguire.
Said Maguire. Did I not say Maguire?
No.
Who did I say?
You said Chilwell.
All right. I crossed them off me. Thingy me jiggy. Oh, what do you call the Liverpool captain? Oh dear.
Come on, you just watched him on Saturday.
This is a horrible
Jordan
game.
Henderson.
Oh, well done, Tags.
Well done, Tags. Raheem Sterling.
So you've got this in the bag, Tony.
Yeah, Tony's
sitting there, he's just rattling them all off.
TC's internet's working lovely down there in Essex.
I'm not cheating, Gaps, I promise.
No, I know, mate.
Butland, Jack Butland.
Oh, no.
Declan Rice is
the other
one.
Yeah, you could get a load, could Tony, I think, there. Well done, Tony, that's a win for you.
Cheers, boys. There's loads of them.
Sancho, Wilson, Winks, Barkley.
Winks.
That was a poor showing from us, I think, there.
Yeah.
I've never seen this game of three Englishmen
and an Irishman. I think me coming second, so I think I've done pretty well.
Yeah, you've done well there.
I took the pressure off everyone. It just took me a while to work out how this game was played. It's my first time, all right? First time. You didn't explain it well enough for me, Dan.
I apologise, Steve. It's the pressure as well.
Clinging to anything right now. That was awful.
You could get what Mason Mount was the one you were looking for.
Mason Mount. He's shocking.
Yeah, poor showing all round other than Tony there. Quick predictions then, Tony, for England. They've got Czech Republic and Bulgaria, as you said. Do you think they'll win them both?
I think so, Dan, yeah. I mean, they're not easy games, but I don't think they're as hard as they used to be these games. So I'm expecting two England wins, and I think they're going to cruise through to the finals.
And finally, Jerry, James Maddison, will he make his England debut?
I really hope so. I think Gareth Southgate's come to watch him in back-to-back games, and he starred in both of them for me. I give him Man of the Match in one. Should have given Man of the Match in the other, but I couldn't because I had to share it out. But I really do hope he does because he deserves it more than anything.
And go on, Steve, you can have the last word. Ben Chilwell as well. You expect him to play both games at left-back for England? He's been playing one, not playing one, playing one, not playing one.
Yeah, he's nice and steady for England. He's not let them down. Why not? You know, I agree with Tony. They're difficult. It's never easy to win away from home. But these are two teams that are nowhere near as strong as they once were.
Yeah, we've got a week or so off now because of the international break. But we'll be back for Matchday -2 ahead of the Burnley game next week. You can, of course, keep up to date with all of Leicester City's players on international duty on lcfc.com, of course. But thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much to our three guests this evening. And have a nice week.
Thank you.